I wanted to share with you, we have a publication called The Plumb Line we put out. I've got a few copies that I'll leave with you. But we had an article in there recently that's a sort of a devotion, and it sort of tells scripturally where we're coming from. And I just wanted to review this article with you just briefly. And this starts out from Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. You know the verse, it's, "For by grace you have been saved through faith." This is not from yourself, it is a gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. This is one of the basic tenets of the Lutheran faith, and it's where we get cheap grace. I mean, we're saved by grace, and that's it. But the one that was interesting to me when I was reading this is in verse 10. Does anybody remember 2:10? It says, "For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." This passage indicates that as Christians, we're to do good works, not to gain salvation, but as a response to His love for us. He has prepared these good works. If we're willing, the work is there. If we don't respond to these works, we don't lose our salvation. We have salvation. It's not to earn salvation. It's to give back. That's where laborers come from. And so I'll pass out some of these before we leave, and if you're interested in that, that's our basic philosophy. I want to tell you about laborers for Christ and what we do and who we are and how it works, and then I want to give you the opportunity to ask any questions that you might have. I'm particularly interested in talking to you because, like I said, we're going to be dealing with you as pastors out in the field. Soon, I hear a lot of you people are fourth year now, so that you're going to be out there. And we deal typically with newer pastors. We deal with everybody, but we deal with a lot of newer pastors out there. 15 years ago, Laborers for Christ was started in the Rocky Mountain District. And it was started by laymen who were retired, and they saw needs out in small communities where there were fledgling congregations that didn't have any facilities. And so instead of playing golf, they went over and helped these people build. It was originally done on the basis that the labor was all donated. And in some cases, early on, the materials were even donated by AAL or other organizations. But after they built 22 congregations, the Synod incorporated Laborers for Christ as a national program. And when they did, they laid down a lot of operational rules for us to follow. We work very closely with Synod's legal counsel. Every one of our standing committee meetings goes through legal counsel. Everything that's printed goes through legal counsel. We're doing a manual right now for our people. That'll all be edited by legal counsel. It's real important that we get that right because attorneys look at LCMS as a deep pockets candidate for a lawsuit, and so they're trying to avoid those kind of problems. from that early start in the Rocky Mountain District, we've grown now to where we have about 500 people who are laborers. Rick Twinhoffel's parents are laborers, and they're currently on the Trinity Lutheran Church job in Sacramento, California. It's their second or third job now, and they'll be going up to Michigan for the summer. I talked with his dad on Monday. Told me to tell you hello. They're the ones that introduced me to Laborers for Christ. I was sort of retired and mostly golfing and fishing for several years, and in fact, we were down on the river fishing with his parents when we lived in LeGrand, and Rick lived there and was in the banking business, and they introduced us to it, and we thought it was such a neat opportunity because it gives you something to do that's interesting. It gives you a chance to give back. People, Laborers for Christ, the people on the job really have a good time out there, and they get something accomplished. And it's really fun because when you're building, you can see the results of your work. I got to say that as pastors, I have to admire the capability of pastors to plunge onward because it's sometimes hard to see the results of your endeavors out there in the field. Anyway, we did 39 projects in 1993. They cost about $20 million to construct. That brings our total production up through the end of 93 to 355 projects. Somewhere between 5% and 10% of all the facilities in LCMS now have been constructed by Laborers for Christ, and that's increasing all the time. I want to talk now about areas of service, the areas in which we work. Now, you're probably, most of you, looking at parish ministry, and that's the traditional place where Laborers for Christ works. We help congregations build their church. Conceptually, that's important. The difference, the opposite side of the coin, would be we would be general contractors that would build it turnkey, like the chapel was built. We don't do that. We come and help the congregation build its church. Our laborers become employees of the congregation. The congregation calls them. We send resumes to the congregation of everybody who's volunteered to work on their project, and they review the resumes, and then they call whoever they would like to call from that list. We work in institutions as well. We're currently completing our eighth project at Concordia River Forest, and those projects have included rebuilding the theater and the upstairs of the administration building. We rebuilt their science labs last year. That was a big project and involved, you know, when we get there, they're great people. Boy, they do. They really do us well. But when we got there last time, they said, we also have this furnace we want you to take out. I said, okay, we'll take it out. This furnace would have filled this room clear up. I'm talking about, it's a great big thing. We had to get it cut and torch and cut it all in little pieces and make a big hole, take it out through the sides. And on that project, we had to tunnel underneath the floors to put in ductwork for this laboratory room. And we put in all that fancy stuff where if you get acid on you, you run over and pull the chain and it washes you off, and things that wash your eyes. And it's real interesting. It's interesting to be able to work in so many different areas. Last year in September, we completed the largest project we've ever done, which was at Concordia Ann Arbor. And it consisted of remodeling all the dormitory rooms to the extent of about $10,000 a piece. It was $2,200,000, that project was. We had about an average of about 16 people there for about 14 months. Big project, tough, hard work. Remodels are hard work. They're harder than building new. This year we'll be building the Iowa East District Office. That's one of the institutional projects that we've agreed to do. And we'll also be working here at the seminary on Sea Call. We're going to bash and batter that one a little bit and see what it looks like when we get done with it. Now, I want you to realize that there's just so much you can do with that building. Overseas, we do quite a bit of work, but we always work not as laborers for Christ, but as employees of the mission department there, the International Center. So when someone goes overseas, they resign from Laborers for Christ and become an employee of Synod. It's an ad hoc situation. They go and do their job, and they come back. My wife and I went on one trip to Africa and lived there for 6 months and helped three congregations in the Kalahari Desert in Botswana build churches out there. Real interesting experience. And unique. I mean, who gets the opportunity to do that? You know, that's really fun. We currently have a project underway in Hong Kong. We have one underway in Ghana. And we've done also in Russia. You may have seen in the Witness about 6 months ago an article on remodeling St. Michael's Lutheran Church. Okay, we did that project. And we do a lot of overseas work. And might be doing more of that, although with what's going on in the world now, you know, they're saying like Sierra Leone is essentially closed as a mission field now, and that's been a big place where we've worked before, so we don't know where it's going to go. I was listening at the staff meeting over at the International Center this morning of all this woe and grief, and I'm saying, well, maybe the Lord's telling us that we need to work in our own mission field here in America. It's a real important place, and that's the final place where we work. We work in congregations, institutions, overseas, and then we work in the North American mission field. And the projects that we did last year in the North American mission field included the church at Muddy Cluster, Montana. Is anybody aware of that one? That's an Indian mission. Let's see, Bauer, his name is, the pastor there, Bauer. But anyway, that project was funded by LWML during their Edmonton conference, and we, right after that conference, we started building on that and just got out of there just barely as the snow came. Interesting project. We did one at Phoenix just ending about 2 weeks ago that was Hispanic, and we're just starting one at Montebello, California that's Hispanic. We're going to do one in the inner city of St. Louis this year with Pastor Beck. Anybody familiar with him, Fred Beck? Man, if you're not familiar with him, you should get familiar with him. He is a great guy. You should seek him out and go look at him, because he's a good model to see some interesting things going on. You know Fearless Fosdick in the Funny Papers? Anybody? Anybody remember him? You know how he was full of bullet holes? That's Beck. He's full of bullet holes too. He's got 6 bullet holes in him. He's a fearless man of God. You really should see him. He's an interesting guy. But what we're going to be doing on this project is working with his congregation in an attempt to rehab some housing units in that area and rebuild some lives of some people in that area. The objective being to turn out people in that area at the end of the project who have the life skills to know to get up in the morning, they know how to shop, they know how to do their bank book, and they also have a skill so they can get a job and become productive members of society instead of being drug dealers. That's a mission thing we're doing. We just finished a mission project in Miami this year where we helped Mount Olive Lutheran Church at Perrine, Florida, rebuild hurricane-destroyed homes. That was done as a mission project from the congregation. The homes weren't owned by Lutherans. They were owned by whoever was out there. And so we went down and just helped rebuild those. It was a real challenge working down there because of the lack of enforcement of the building codes over the years that caused a lot of the damage when the wind came has now caused the building department officials to become overzealous the other direction. And it was really challenging to work there. So anyway, those are the areas we work in, congregations, institutions, overseas, and in the North American mission field. We feel that we're a missions organization. Now, there's a lot of people that want us to be an LCEF, but we don't want to be there. We don't want to become a business organization. Our people are in mission, and they present the gospel through their actions to the community where they work. That's real important. When I was in California on a project, I like to sing barbershop music, and I went to a barbershop chapter there that was in Whittier, California, and these people introduced me. I said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Well, we're helping build a church over at Hacienda Heights." I said, "Oh, yeah, boy, that's interesting. We've been watching that. That's really coming together." And here was a totally unrelated group of people who were seeing what was going on in the community. We feel that we are in mission, and that's real important to us. If we were in LCEF, it would be a different organization, and we would lose a fair number of laborers because that's not where they want to be. They don't want to be out there as a financial type of people. They want to be in mission. We're also on mission to the congregation. Now, I don't know how many of you know about this, but the building process is fairly complex, fairly difficult, and it's especially difficult to do by committee because the altar guild wants the hot and cold running water right close to the altar, and then the young mothers want a cry room that's right there with all the facilities in it, and the organist wants a choir loft with a pipe organ in it, and everybody has their own agenda, and these people get at odds with each other. I don't know if you know this or not, but you'll know it soon if you don't, if you're out in the parish, that typically the chairman of the building committee will resign from the congregation when the project is complete. It's an extremely stressful job. It's real hard to try to balance everybody's interests. And so what we do as a mission to that congregation is help the congregation become united again. When we come there, we're not anybody's party. We're not politically involved in the congregation. Our job is to execute the drawings the way they are, and that's what we do. And so as these people are kind of at odds with each other, kind of duking it out verbally and mentally and everything, we come there and build. And when we start building, these people, after a while, they start noticing that this is going on. And it sort of draws them by example into a support of the project. And so we feel that that's an important ministry. The other ministry that's really important for laborers for Christ is the ministry to each other. Laborers for Christ are all retired people. You have to be able to sustain yourself financially to be a laborer for Christ. It's not a career opportunity. As a result of that, we deal with high aged people, and we have a fairly high attrition. We always have, every year we have somebody die on a project, because we have 500 people who are median age of 63 probably, and they go from about 50 to about 80. And so that's a real important mission again. But before I go on now, I want you to remember this, okay? Laborers for Christ helps congregations build their churches. Contact us early when you get an idea, when your congregation has an idea. That's when we want to hear from you. And don't go on rumors. Don't go on, I think you have to, if you want to use Laborers for Christ. Laborers for Christ can provide a real good cost savings for congregations. The cost savings typically would range from 10 to 25%. It's variable by every project. Every project is different. We don't have standard plans. When we build a project, that's the only project like that we'll ever build. So we don't have a uniform ability to say it's going to be X dollars. But the savings come in two areas. They come in contract or construction management. Our people will come and help the congregation with its planning, with its contracting, with buying materials, getting everything set up to build, and they'll also help the congregation reconcile the budget to the cost. In other words, you got $300,000 to build with, and the bids come in at $400,000. We'll help you work through the $100,000. You know, the choices are get more money, build less building. And you can do that. We can build less buildings frequently by changing architectural styles a little bit, or changing the materials that are specified, changing the suppliers. There's a big difference in cost out there just amongst different suppliers. You can buy the same thing. People say, it's a real funny thing. They say you get what you pay for. And I don't think that's true. I think you pay what you pay and you get what you get. And it doesn't have anything to do with each other. And so if you can go buy a Ford pickup for $10,000 at this dealership or $12,000 at this dealership, do you get more if you pay $12,000 for the same truck? Same truck. No, you don't get more for it. And so our people, like at Winnemucca, Nevada, we built last year, and our foreman saw a truck going down the road. It said some national, like Reynolds Siding or something like that. It was a national representative from a siding company. He chased this guy down and said, hey, we're building a church over here and we're kind of short on funds and we really need to get siding for this church and we also need soffits and so forth. And it worked out that he was able to buy for like a 6,000 square foot church all of the siding and all the soffit covers, that's the underneath of the eaves, in steel for about $4,000, down from like $15,000, what you would go out to the lumber yard and buy that same material for. Those are the kind of things that I'm talking about. So we can effectuate savings in that area, in the contracting area, and our people are willing to do that. They're willing to chase down a guy. I mean, they go where they can to make the deal that they can make. One of the things that's really significant in a lot of cases, as compared with a general contractor, is we're an ad hoc situation. So we'll go into a community, we'll deal once with the contractors there, and that enables us to get, in some cases, a much better price, because if the congregation deals with a general contractor, that general contractor has the electrician, the plumbers, the concrete people, everybody that he works with, and they have their deal arranged ahead of time. And so, you know, if it's that contractor's deal, it costs X amount of money to work, where we'll go out and we'll get the concrete guy alone and we'll do our business with him, and we'll get the electrician alone and we'll do our business with him. We'll also do things like in Helena, Montana this year, we built a parish hall and the electrician's contract came in at X dollars less, $38 an hour for every hour a laborer worked on their project, on their electrical. And so it cost net to the congregation about $6.50 an hour for a laborer. So they were able to, for every hour our people could put in there, they could make the congregation $31 on hard dollars, you know. So that's, the contracting is real important. The other place that we can help the congregation save money is in labor. Our laborers work 8 hours every day, and they work all the time, even though they're older people. We've worked right next to journeyman carpenters, and our people do more in the day because they work all day. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare deal. But I mean, we'll be at work an hour before the tradesmen will show up, and they just get there and then they go for coffee, and then they just get back and then they go for lunch. And our people work 8 hours a day, and they're motivated strongly from the standpoint of giving back. This is as opposed to out in the business world, where they're motivated from the standpoint of a financial profit. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it is an equally strong, or even maybe a stronger motivation with laborers than it is with general contractors. And it's not money that motivates them. And that's really significant. We try to get 25% of the labor donated by the congregation. And this donation of labor comes in two areas. We will ask anybody in every congregation we go into, we say, do you have any retired people who would be willing to donate their time on this project as a regular member of the crew? And if they do, then they'll come and they'll work there just like the crew does, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, and they donate their time because they're members of the congregation. We also typically will work in congregations. Now, in institutions, it's different. But in congregations, we work from Tuesday through Saturday, and we schedule work days on Saturday so that when people have a day off, then they can come down and work on the project. And the type of work that they do is, if we have a lot of shovel work before we put the concrete in, they would come and help that. And if we want to nail a deck down, what our crew will do through the week, they'll get it all set up, and they'll just get the decking tacked in place, and then the congregation will come and do all the nailing or painting, roofing, that type of thing. When we try to set it up and organize the job so that they can come and people can just make a lot of motions on Saturday, and maybe we'd have 10 people on a typical Saturday. Not every Saturday works out that way. There's a flow in building, and so we have to work in that basis. So anyway, the cost savings are in contract services and in labor. Now, another thing that if I had it to do over again, which I don't, I tried it, but I didn't get anywhere, so I would not name it Laborers for Christ. Now, you all know where the name comes from. But congregations, and particularly builders, feel when you say a laborer in the building trades, that says a person who has no skills. And we have congregations that say, well, we've hired our general contractor and we're ready for your laborers. Okay, they're viewing us then as the guys that are going to come and work cheap. When they did this, they took up a conclusion that they made based on our name, and it's an unfortunate choice of names. It's unfortunate to use the word laborer with building because it denotes something that we're not. We try to get congregations to avoid these design build firms, because they cost a lot of money, and even if you have an architect that comes and supervises the construction, he might charge $25,000 for the project, and the cost of all the laborers combined won't be that much, and our foreman will do that work. He'll do it. You don't need to hire somebody else to do it, and that money is wasted. So as you go along, if you can just retain the concept that talk to us early and understand how it works, then maybe we can help you, you know, along the way. I already mentioned that we don't have standard plans. Every project we do is designed by an architect. I shouldn't say almost everyone is designed by an architect. Every one of them is different. We do have criteria under which we operate that was set up by the Legal Department of Senate. As I said, it's to avoid legal pitfalls for the Senate, and it's also to avoid, you know, injuries to the laborers. The criteria are these, and I don't want you to remember them, but I want you to remember that there are criteria, so that when you get ready to build, you don't just have a set of plans drawn and send them to us, because if you do, we might not be able to work your drawings exactly the way they're drawn. A roof pitch is normally expressed in number of feet this way and number of feet this way. Okay, the vertical is first. the maximum roof pitch we can build is 8 feet up and 12 feet out. That's roughly a, 33% slope or something like that. These are 12-12 pitches right here on the chapel. That's 12 feet out, 12 feet up. The maximum sidewall height is 12 feet per floor, with a two-floor maximum of 24 total feet, but there has to be a floor in between to get a 24-foot sidewall. Maximum square footage of the entire project is 12,000 square feet. Maximum height of the roof peak from the finished floor is 32 feet. The maximum span of trusses with a flat bottom cord, that would be a truss that the bottom is like this and then it goes like that, typical like a house truss, is 48 feet. And the maximum span of a scissors truss, that's one that goes like this. It has a pitch here and then a pitch inside, gives you a vaulted inside, is 44 feet. Those are basically our criteria. Now, if your project is designed outside the criteria, we have to go to Synod's liability carrier to get approval to build it. And in order to do that, if it's outside the criteria, they normally put stipulations on it. Yeah, you can build it, but somebody else has to do the roof. A contractor has to do the roof. That cost might run the cost way up, because the things that have to be done by an outside contractor are the most difficult parts, and that's all they do. So they have to charge more than they would if they were building the whole project. So it's important to stay within the criteria if laborers is going to build your facility. Within the evolution of a project, or from concept, this thing that I'm talking about here, sometime there's a concept. You want to build a parish hall, a school, a new sanctuary, you want to do remodeling of your sanctuary, whatever it is. From the time that you have an interest in that, if you will call us, we have regional consultants. We have 12 of them in the United States who are trained to work with congregations, and they'll consult with you monthly or more frequently as you see fit, and they'll come and help you. And what they help you do is understand the concept of how Laborers for Christ works and how it fits your program. They can also, a lot of them can help you with design concepts. I mean, we're not going to draw your plans, but we might say, because we've done a lot, we've seen a lot, we might have suggestions of a way that you could do that in a more expeditious way of whatever you want to do. Regional consultants will work with your congregation from the first time you contact Laborers for Christ until the project is completed. Once we get your application, then we call it a project. Now, I used to have a saying, I don't know if Rick and I worked together for some time, and this saying that my wife and I developed over the years was, with a written agreement, you got a prayer, but a verbal agreement's nothing but air, okay? If we don't have a written agreement, we don't call it a project in Laborers for Christ. Because we talk to a lot of people who want to do things, but until we get an application, the application entails such things as getting approval by the district mission board. The mission exec sends in, we acknowledge that they're doing this. This is for maybe obvious, maybe not, political reasons within the Synod. We don't want to be doing buildings that are not approved by the district. That's really where we're at. We're trying to work within the organization. There's a lot of congregations that there'll be one person who thinks they should build, and so he contacts us, and if we put that down as a project, it's never going to go anyplace because it's really not a project. The application process is really important because it sort of formalizes that. It forces the congregation also to go through a bunch of steps. When you get the application, it's 22 pages long. And it has a whole bunch of checklists. When you go down through, and you need to do this first, this second, all that sort of thing. So anyway, once we get the application, then we try to establish a starting date. And the starting date is the date when we would have our laborers come there. Okay? The date that the foreman would come would be earlier. Between the application and the starting date, there's a middle third of the process, that this is the thankless third. It's the awful time when you have to do all this paperwork and you have to comply with all the government regulations. And the things that we run into are things like this. You have to relocate the endangered Mojave tortoise off of that ground before you can build there. And you have to do it in compliance with EPA regulations. And the attorney that files the stuff with EPA charges $1,000 an hour. And that's a fact at Yucca Valley. It's a fact. San Diego congregation has 10 acres that was donated for their church that is covered with California purple sage. Purple sage is the habitat of the California gnatcatcher, which is endangered. Okay, you got a problem. In this middle third, you've got to solve that problem. Before you're ever going to build, you're going to solve that problem because you're not going to get a building permit without it. Land use. We're getting a lot of, at Temecula, California, the congregation built or bought a church building site at the time a subdivision was established years ago. It was bought by the extension fund, excuse me. But that, when they got ready to build, the community got petitions to get them out of there, and even though it was zoned and designated as a church building site, they could not build on that site. And through a bunch of litigation and all that lawyer business, they wound up trading that site to the city, who's making it into a park, and gaining the land to build down by City Hall. And that's a long-term process. It's not something that happens overnight. At Bend, Oregon, the congregation there has a building site, and they've had to deal with the city and the federal government and the county to acquire titles to pieces of the real estate they're building. It's not a big piece of real estate, but it has, you know, like some streets that are being relocated and an old Forest Service office and stuff like that. So it's been a real tough deal for them, and it takes a lot of time, and you can't appreciate this until you've been there, but you're not going to go any place until you get those problems solved. So in this middle third, in addition, in that middle third, you have to deal with LCEF if you're going to get a loan from LCEF. And that is a real challenge because of the process. Now, I want you to think about this. Rick and I were both in the securities business, and we understand something about security rules. LCEF is operated under the security rules. It's not a bank. It's a security. It's like limited partnerships. That's what it's like. And they have to comply with the rules of all 50 states because they sell securities in all 50 states. And so, because there's been so much problem areas within the securities business on the sale of securities for the purpose of building buildings, the laws are very tough. Okay, now just remember that LCEF has to operate under those rules. The unfortunate thing for us is that when a congregation applies to LCEF, they do all of this demographic study. They say, well, here we are. We got so many people, and they contribute so much, and we got this base to work with, and we feel that by evangelism and so forth, we can increase our numbers at so many, and by such and such a time, we'll have so many people that contribute so much so we can sustain a loan of so many dollars in payments of so much a month and all that sort of thing. When you get that all done, they send you a letter that says, notice of loan approval, okay? Now, if you had a loan approval, what would you think? Well, we're ready to build, right? That doesn't say anything about the building process. Nothing about the building process. And so we've instituted, in the last couple of years, people who provide the service to the congregation of doing all of the preliminary work on the building side for the congregation so that they can get it done. It's a tough area to work in, and again, it's in this never-never land where you have to do all this work, but you can't see anything happen. And, you know, I mean, well, I get these concepts in my head, and up here in the North Woods in Michigan and Wisconsin, Minnesota, all those guys, I'm from there, see them. My grandmother and grandfather were born in Sweden, and those guys hibernate in the wintertime. And then the spring thaw comes, and it's all nice out, and they say, we're ready to build. What they're saying is psychologically, we'd like to build. What they're not saying is,
we have done this middle third work so that we're ready. And that's a real unfortunate thing, because with laborers for Christ, they typically will live in RVs, these trailers and motorhomes, and they can stay there until it freezes up in the fall. Once it freezes up, they're gone. And at that point, your congregation is on its own. We help you build, but, you know, at the point where it freezes up, then we have to leave. And so it's important that these north latitudes start on time. They need to start right now. They need to start May 1st. And that's our big starting time is right now. We'll start 25 projects in the next 45 days or something like that. The middle third, again, if we can get our pre-construction people in there to help the congregation, then it can start on time. It's really important. I know this is theoretical to you, but when you're there on the ground without your project starting like you'd like to have it start, then it becomes real critical. Let's see. The final third, of course. The first third is, the way I like to envision it, is the regional consultant, the pre-construction, and then the execution of the project. That's the kind of the sequence. I'd like to just mention to you now three or four myths that we hear about quite frequently, and it really hurts us sometimes, because a congregation will say, we hear this long time later, we didn't use laborers for Christ because, insert myth here. These would be that we only build for mission congregations. It's amazing to me how few of people in LCMS know about laborers for Christ, but how many of them know that we only build for mission congregations. And that came from the Rocky Mountain District. That's the way they originally started. That's all that they did. We now feel that because we have so many people motivated to give back, that we have opportunity to provide a broader service than just helping mission congregations, and we will help anybody that we can. The only requirement is that they are LCMS related. They don't even have to be LCMS. We're going to do some work at Camp Luther Haven up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. That's a pan-Lutheran thing. We built a nursing home at Crown Point, Indiana, that's pan-Lutheran. We're going to be building a chapel at Benton, Iowa, at a nursing home that's pan-Lutheran. The thing we did down in Miami last winter, that was the people that we built for weren't even Lutheran. But anyway, so we don't just deal with mission congregations, and we don't just build churches. Churches are probably 25% of what we build. The other 75% include parish halls, camps, offices, institutional work. Did I say schools? Schools are real important. We build a lot of schools. One of the ones, I heard this again last week, I hear it quite often. These congregations know this. Rumor. It's not true, but they know that, or somebody there knows that. You have to serve lunch to the laborers every day. It's just not true. And it's real frustrating to me that they would make their decision to not use laborers because of this myth. Now, let me tell you what the reality is. When they first started in the Rocky Mountain District, that was how it worked. These people went and worked for nothing. In order to expedite the project, the congregation gave them lunch every day. Our laborers are high-end people. I think the average net worth of laborers is probably more than $1 million. They're not poor, downtrodden folks who need a job, and they sure don't need a free lunch, and they really would like to not eat all that food that, you know, Lutheran ladies are wonderful cooks, but it's kind of fattening, you know. And so they have fairly strict diet regimes. In fact, Don Goretzis, who's coming here to be the foreman on this project in the seminary, is a retired CIA guy. Extremely tough. I was telling Marvin, he fell off a roof last year. It's really funny. This is strange. I mean, it's strange. They had that. He was working in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and they were building a new church. And it was dry all summer, and then it rained. And so he had a safety meeting the morning it rained. He said, now, we've been up there, we're used to it being dry, it's rained, it's slick, now you got to watch it. It went right up the top of the roof, it was 32 feet, it was right at the maximum of our criteria. and it was 8:12, and he slipped, and he slid clear down the roof and fell 14 feet onto the ground. And the good news is that it was him, because anybody else it would have killed. And he bounced, and he called me up on Monday and said, it's okay, don't worry about it, everything's under control, even though he had a multiple broken bone. He gets up in the morning, he literally has a flag on his motorhome. He runs his flag up every morning. He does 50 push-ups and runs 40 miles and all that kind of stuff before he ever starts at work. He's a real, real physically fit guy. And he, the last thing that he wants is to have, you know, casseroles every lunch. I mean, so these myths, if you can just go around them, and even when your parish people say, well, we know this, say, well, let's just call them and talk to them and make sure, because our regional consultants will come there and help you through that. Another one is this project manager, that you have to provide somebody for leadership because these guys are just laborers and they don't know anything about building. Another one is that old guys can't handle it. And again, you can look at the projects we've built, every place we've built them, and you know, the thing that you hear from architects is real interesting. I mean, I have a brother who's an architect, and I was a designer for an architect at one time, and I've known a lot of architects, and these guys will walk around and mutter to themselves that architects are kind of different, you know, people. But what they're basically saying is that you can't buy the workmanship that you're getting on this job at any price. It's not available in the marketplace. They just don't do work like this anymore. And so the work that you're going to get on your job is going to be number one work. Anyway, last thing I'd like to tell you is that Laborers for Christ help congregations build, contact us early, and don't go on rumors. Let know for a fact what you're concerned about and talk to us about it. Okay, does anybody have any questions, anything they'd like to say? Or
you talked about doing work at some institutions like the colleges and here at Sioux Falls. Do you employ people? People from the communities and schools for that type of work?
No, we employ all the people that work on Laborers Project from the Laborers roster, but except the volunteers from congregations. And anytime you say that, of course, we're building in Montbello right now, California, which is L.A. This time of year, we cannot get laborers in L.A. They're all up in the north. And so we hire people off the street down there, just what it takes. Normally, we don't hire people, you know, outside of Laborers for Christ. The institution has that prerogative. The institution, together with the foreman, call who they want. But we try to work within our own ranks on that.
But so for the institution, that's pretty much just laborers.
No, if you, for instance, I don't know anything, and it's not my business, and I'm not the foreman on this project here, but if anybody here wants to work on this project, then they should become a laborer. Just file an application with us to be a laborer, and then you can be on the list and get called to the job. That's how you would go about doing it. Uh-huh.
Have you found that in some communities where there's a mission congregation that wants to build that... there are some places that don't want churches being built. You mentioned that one time, but there's sometimes communities start petitions to stop building. Is that becoming more common?
Yeah, absolutely. The New Age movement is really kind of exasperating in a way, because you know, this religion of church and separation of church and state is basically it's the separation of Christianity out. That's what it is. New Age is openly practiced in schools, government, every place. And New Age people tend to be these friends of Earth, Mother Earth, you know, they worship the Earth, all that kind of stuff. We had a project at Gainesville, Florida, big sign put up there and says, is it worth raping Mother Earth for another church or something like that? You know, that kind of stuff. There is active opposition to Christian churches being built. You're going to see younger guys persecution of Christians in the United States in your career, I think. But there's active opposition, and I'm talking about vocal, adamant opposition. These people will do. Lawrence, Kansas, built this year, and they had a two-stage building permit when they built their church originally. The first stage was built, and they wanted to build a second stage. For us to park on site, we normally try to park all of our RVs on site and have a camp there because we feel that our mission to the congregation is much better served in that way. For them to do that, they had to apply to the city, and they didn't want to do that because of the New Age influence there. They felt like by doing that, they would open that can of worms, and they would be into a long litigation to be able to build. And so they said, if we can park in a commercial zone or industrial zone, we don't have to go for a permit, and one of our guys owns a donut factory, and he's got a lawn, so that's where they wanted to park. But yeah, that is Sedona, Arizona is another place. I mean, they tend to be centers of intellectuals, college towns, and then these high-end places like Aspen and, you know, Sedona and Crested Butte and Sun Valley and places like that tend to be. I mean, it is really challenging to get permits and so forth in a lot of those places.
Do you get involved in a bid process with some suppliers? And if so, what is the process that has final approval on those bids?
Well, everything that we do, again, assuming in the context of the congregation, is done in conjunction and by direction of the building committee, okay? Typically, what we do and what our objective to do on every job is to have our pre-construction people come and help the congregation with all of its bidding, with all the subcontractors and all the material suppliers. And if you deal with LCEF, you have to submit all of that before you can break ground, okay? And so typically we will come there and work with the building committee to do it. The way it works out is we do it and the building committee approves it. They direct us how they want it done. Our guy will do it. He just goes through the motions. He talks to all the suppliers and contractors and so forth. And when he gets the bid together, then he compiles everything and then he lays it out for the building committee and said, okay, here's how it comes down, you know. And does that answer your question? Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have plans for expansion or a new church like within the next 10 years. You know, you're thinking way down the road. Is it too soon to get in touch with you now for that 10-year project?
Yeah, I don't think the time to get in touch with us is when you see that you're going to start actually doing something. If it's just, you know, if somebody would like to have a church someplace, but that's where it's at, I mean, we can't do anything there. But the reason it's important to contact us early, we get a lot of situations where the congregation goes through. Architects will draw the building. In fact, we've got one at Madison right now where the architect guaranteed the congregation they could build this thing for $400,000. And the closest we can get is $465,000. We just can't get any closer than that. And so now he's kind of mad, and he's gone out, and he says, I'm going to get the contractors to do it for $400,000. Well, it's just not going to happen. It can't happen. It won't work that way. And so what happens with architects, they'll do all the design, and it'll come in over budget. And the thing that's really terrible to us is we see it quite a bit where architects, you know, building committees, who are they? Pastors, teachers, guys that work at Safeways, you know, just people, they're not builders. And so the architect says, wouldn't you like to have some of these nice hand-carved doors from the mission down in Taos, New Mexico? He said, well, yeah, that's nice. And wouldn't you like to have this carpet with your logo woven in it? Well, yeah, that's nice. They never talk about money. Now, this isn't, I shouldn't, this, we run into these situations where, I mean, the budget is big dollars, twice of what it's possible to have. A thing to bear in mind is that architects get paid, this is real strange to me, but they get paid on the percentage of the cost. The more it costs, the more they get paid. It's real strange. It would seem to me like the less it costs, the more they would get paid. But that isn't the way it works. And so if the congregational people don't have the knowledge or experience to be able to ask the question, then, you know, it so... Did that answer your question? Did I miss it? Okay.
I guess mine dovetails into that in terms of, you know, not hiring an architect for the long-term supervision of the plan, but yet at the same time, I assume that, what's the normal process, or what's the best way to involve the architect with, you talk about advising or...
What we would like to see, and we think that you can get the architectural services you need in this fashion, you need to have a concept of what you want, your congregation. Some place you're going to get that. Now, you might get it from us, you might get it from LCEF, you might get it from the Standing Committee on Architecture for LCMS. They're real good at helping people at that. Once you know what you want, then you need to get your working drawings and design all done. It's called schematics, when the first part. And that's what architects love, schematics. They get to draw all these air castles, this thing here. They draw it all up, and it's really neat. Okay, once the design is accepted, then comes the grinding drudgery work for the architect. They have to draw it and do all the specs. And that's a big pain for those guys. They like schematics, but they don't like the detail work. And so it's kind of hard to get that through, I mean, to get that done. But once the congregation has the schematics, I mean the details, in other words, they have a complete set of construction documents, at that point, we would like to see them retain a relationship with the architect of an hourly advisory nature, so that our foreman, when he looks at the drawing and he adds up all the dimensions and that they don't total up to the full length of the wall, for instance, he can call them up and visit with him and see, you know, am I missing something? Is there some, you know, in other words, where there's problems, he can work those out with the architect, but not on the basis where the architect comes out there every week, you know, and it's a percentage basis. Their schematics are like 1% and the design is like 3%, and then the pre-construction is 1%, and it just goes up and gets about 8 or 9% if you go all the way through that. It's real variable, too. But we would like to work with a complete set of documents that show the building. I mean, if there's anything left to your imagination, then, you know, we have to have understanding as to whose imagination gets exercised in that, you know. And then, but then have that relationship where we can go back to the architect for clarification.
Have you had any problems with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, those people who...
Okay. My boss in the flow chart, or whatever you call it, over there at Senate is Bob Scuderi. I don't know if you know him or not. He's the director of North American Missions or something like that. Anyway, he says, you got to recruit some blacks in your program. I said, okay, how am I going to do that? He said, well, go up to the black convocation next year and give them a talk. And I did. And they don't want to do that. They want to get money. They don't want to work for Laborers for Christ on a donating basis. And we don't have any. But we have a lot of Hispanics. We have Indians. We have a Hawaiian. You know, I mean, we'll go any way that we can. We have probably 30 ladies who are rostered. The thing that keeps ladies away from Laborers for Christ to some extent is that if you're a rostered laborer, you're not a cook. You're a builder, and you drive nails, and you climb the ladder, and you work on the roof, and you work on the concrete, and you do that. That's what we do. We don't provide cooks and that type of thing. Our ladies do a lot of cooking, and they become involved like a member of the congregation as the project goes along, and they'll help. Sometimes they'll remodel a kitchen in the existing church or whatever is around to do service-wise. But that's not laborers' work, you know. And so I don't feel that we would have any EEO problem. I mean, we're totally willing to hire anybody. I mean, and when I say we, we'll put them on a roster and forward their resumes like everyone else to the congregations. And we actively promote that. I'll be relating Laborers for Christ to the Hispanic Conference this year, and we've done quite a bit of Hispanic work. We've done quite a bit of black work, you know, in black congregations.
That's our time for this morning. We'd like to thank Kurt for coming, and I'm sure he will be around for a few minutes afterwards if you'd like to talk to him on an individual basis.
Okay, I'm going to give you some of this stuff if you want it, or just put it back here on the table. This is our publication that came out, the last one. Next one should be out right away.